Welcome to Faith and Leadership on DFW Live. Glad to be talking with you. This is Jerry Jacob, your host. And thanks to the great work that's being done by Guadalupe Radio Network and Media Evangelization. And it's the springtime of the new evangelization. Who would have thought we'd say that in 2022? I am so excited today to be talking, to have with us somebody else who's really built an amazing career, crossing so many lines in the world of media and communications. Patrick Nowakowski, welcome to the show.
Jerry, great to be with you.
Well, Patrick, you've done amazing things in your life, but 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World is the name of your most recent effort. And I want to talk with you about that. That's a book that you have published, and it's won so many awards from the Catholic Press Association. But you're an old hand when it comes to media and communications and journalism, and really all things Catholic in so many different aspects of your work and career. But let me first of all ask you to give us a quick little summary. You're also a founder of Nova Media, which is your own media and communications organization, and your husband and father, five beautiful children. How old are your children, Patrick?
Youngest is 8 and the oldest is 19.
Right, so you're not busy these days, are you?
No, three teenagers.
And it also explains why you work so hard, because you've got to work for a long time to put food on the table with all these kids.
Yeah, they're all boys except for the one girl.
So, oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, where's the girl on the order?
She's number 2.
Well, God bless you with all that work. And you know what? I think a very fitting introduction to this segment is Totus Tuus, all for you, Patrick. Tell us a little bit, first and foremost, very briefly, about your own career. Anything you want to highlight with regard to your work? Give us a quick snapshot of your life and career.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Saskatchewan, Canada.
Wow.
And finished college. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine. You know, that wow. movie, Almost Famous? That's
yeah.
the life I wanted when I was a teenager.
Wow.
But God had other plans. God had other plans. Mm-hmm. I majored in broadcast journalism, but I really gravitated toward print. So my first job out of college, I applied for this job with a regional Catholic newspaper in Saskatchewan.
Wow.
And lo and behold, they offered me the job. I was there for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And that was my entree into Catholic communications, and I've never left.
Wow.
So from there, I bounced to Southern California when I was 27, worked for a Catholic magazine there, worked for the Marian Fathers, the Marians of the Immaculate Conception in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, my goodness. What, as in Father Michael Gately?
As in Father Michael Gately was in high school when I was that long ago.
Oh my goodness. Wait a second. You look really young, Patrick. How did you, well, you have the secret of youth, apparently.
I feel really young. My gosh. So I worked there from 96 to 2001.
Wow.
And the Marians are a Polish order of priests and brothers.
Yeah.
And I had only been working there for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And I won a trip for two to Cancun. Now, this is, you might go, well, what's that got to do with John Paul II?
Right.
Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So it was December of 96. I won this trip with the Marians at their Christmas party.
Wow.
And I called the travel agent and I said, I don't want to go to Cancun. I want to go to Rome.
Wow.
And they said, well, okay, you can go to Rome. And my boss said, well, since you're going to Rome, you might as well do some work for us. I was the assistant editor of Marian Helper magazine.
Wow.
And John Paul II had said, hey, I want you, Marian Fathers, to lead the re-evangelization of Eastern Europe. And I was the cub reporter for the magazine. I was going to Rome. So they said, you might as well go to Eastern Europe, and this is 97,
okay.
and write some stories, talk to these priests who are behind the Iron Curtain during the Soviet era.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, would you like to meet the Pope?
Oh, my goodness.
And that was kind of the mic drop moment. So the trip from Chu to Cancun, having my name pulled out of that hat, led to meeting John Paul II. So
that's amazing.
I did. I went to Rome. I met the Holy Father. I went to Eastern Europe. I interviewed these priests and brothers and wrote about their needs. And the stories were wildly successful.
Yeah.
So the Marians in 98 said, well, let's send them back again. So I went back to Rome. I met John Paul II. I went to Eastern Europe. 99, 2000, same thing.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like the Catholic Forrest Gump.
That's
I
great.
Got to meet the Pope again.
Yeah.
And So that was my journey.
Well, and you know, I wanted to tell you one thing about your journey, which is not news to you, but strikes me for the first time hearing it. Little shades of Maximilian Kolbe, who was a journalist in Poland, go figure, back before he was martyred, right? Here's a man who nobody really knows, was just a really beautiful radical for Christ with the media and the press. And I just love that because it's a work we do here. But yeah, I mean, and JP2 also, the word, right? So I want to bring us to the book here. And by the way, when you have high praise from people like Curtis Martin, Patrick Madrid, Jason Everett, I mean, Joan Lewis, these aren't just people that fell off the turnip truck. These are some of the giants in the Catholic world who have just applauded and brought lavish praise to your book, right? So tell us about 100 Ways.
Yeah, so I'll just continue my journey just briefly. So I met my wife in 2001. We got married in 2002.
Yeah.
I moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan, met this guy named Tom Monahan, who founded Legatus Ave Maria, University of Ave Maria School of Law.
Right.
Ended up being the first communications director at the law school. And then Legatus Magazine needed an editor in 2005.
Yeah.
And I applied, got the job. They said, pack your bags, move to Southwest Florida from the I said, yes.
Wait a second. Wait, pack your bags, go move to the middle of the swamp and be surrounded by gators doing incredible Catholic things.
Naples.
Naples. You're right. Not 30 miles up the road in the swamp, but Naples is where the rich and famous go in the country.
We were in Naples before. This is before the town, the university was even built in 2005.
Okay.
And so I worked for Tom Monahan, University Law School, and Legatus for 15 years.
Wow.
And that's how I met these wonderful people, Joan Lewis, Curtis Martin, everybody, you know. So that radically changed my life. And while I was working for Legatus, I started giving this talk on, because John Paul II died in 2005, and then he was beatified, canonized, and then then it struck me, oh my gosh, I actually met a bona fide saint. I mean, it was cool to meet the Pope.
Yeah.
But once that Pope dies and becomes canonized, you're like, he's really a saint now. It started me thinking about his legacy and the things that he did, how he changed the world.
Yeah.
And I started giving this talk on how I met him,
how
I won this ticket, went to Eastern Europe, met the Pope again, 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 again. And then what his impact was on the world. So a couple of years ago, I recognized that we're getting really close to 2020, which was the 100th birthday of John Paul II, May of 2020.
Wow.
So I started pitching this idea to Catholic publishers, and our Sunday visitor stepped up and said, yes, great idea.
Wow.
Let's do this. So I wrote the book. Wow. We published it just in time for his 100th birthday in 2020.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I kind of feel like my role now is essentially to be a megaphone for John Paul II.
Right.
Who would have thought? This kid from Saskatchewan gets to be the mouthpiece of John Paul II, or at least one of them.
Yeah.
We really need to amplify his teaching and his life and his legacy, and so much that he did still needs to be unpacked.
Right.
So that's really what the book is, and it's really just taking his 26 and a half year papacy and crunching it down so that dummies like me can understand it. I essentially wrote it for young people who didn't grow up under his time as Pope.
Yeah.
So they didn't just go and read, because each of these 100 things is only a page and a half, sometimes 2 pages.
Okay.
It's a real simple read, but you really wrap your head around who he was and what he did by going through
that. Well, that's truly, I mean, this is a man and a Pope who has had the most amazing, multidimensional. Every time I turn around and read something, and I've read a lot by and about JP2, St. John Paul the Great, there are surprises and beautiful little flowers and little gems that come out of his papacy and come out of his life. And you know, I've started a little library, Patrick, and it's rapidly becoming the largest section of my overall library, because everything from, you know, there's a book, There's a book about JP2 called He Liked Tuesdays Best, which is you've heard about, and many yeah. others. You know, I mean, these are there's so much out there. But I want to ask you about these little tidbits and these little stories. I mean, in this moment and in this era, every time we turn around, there's so much relevance that JP2 has to our culture and to our time. And I like the fact that you've written it in little vignettes, right? So tell me a little bit, give me a story or two. We, you know, I just want to be cognizant of our time, about five yeah. minutes left here, but give us a story, for instance, give me one of your favorite stories about JP2 that maybe not that well known.
I'll give you two.
Okay.
Two. John Paul II's mother, Amelia, had a little girl who was born. It's unclear whether she was born dead or she died shortly after.
Okay.
And so his mother had bad health. She died when he was 8 years old, and she had many years of bad health. Well, okay. while she was pregnant with the future Saint Pope, the doctors advised her to have an abortion.
Wow.
They strongly advised that it would be good to terminate this pregnancy. Your health isn't good.
Yeah.
You could suffer because of this child.
Yeah.
And being a devout Catholic in a very Catholic country with a strong Catholic culture, she refused. And sure enough, the baby was born. He was very healthy, very strong, grew up to be an athlete and future Pope and future saint. But isn't it interesting that we're at this moment in history where Roe v. Wade has recently been overturned?
Yeah.
And we learned that these people, these saints, several saints, including John Paul II, the doctors advised that we terminate.
Of course.
And how many saints are we killing in the womb before they have a chance for a life? And changing the world the way John Paul II did.
Yeah.
So I just find that a remarkable story. And how many women actually listen to their doctor and say, well, he's a doctor, he knows best. But doctors don't always know best.
No, they don't. And something that comes to mind when I think about that story, about that personal, is the personal warmth and the humanity of JP2, which also shines so greatly.
Mm-hmm.
He was a child who really pretty young age. His mother was no longer alive, certainly, and his father passed away. So this was a young man who, by and large, you could call an orphan, and maybe you could even say was not, didn't have good parenting in terms of having present. And you know, one of the arguments I'm going to use, one of the weak arguments used by those that are in favor of abortion is, well, we're bringing a child into the world that may not have the greatest chance to succeed or to thrive.
Yeah.
And gosh, JP2 just proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that, guess what? The good Lord has a design and a plan and can make lemonade out of lemons. That's an amazing, amazing story. A great example, Patrick. Just about 2 minutes left here. I want to ask you one other. Tell me a little bit, by the way, about now in this present time. You know, you've met JP2, I think, four times, and I've had the blessing.
Five
times. Okay, I have the blessing to kiss his ring a couple of times. My wife and I met in Rome, and very shortly thereafter had the blessing of being at a smaller audience with him. And I think about what the world needs now. What can you tell us? There's a little bit of advice from JP2 to all of us that are persevering through and some of us struggling through these dark times. And of course, the world has always seen dark times, and we've always had the glory of God to lead us.
Yeah. John Paul II, if you really look at his life, he lived through some pretty dark times.
Yeah.
You know, he lost his mother when he was 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
Lost his brother when he was 12. His brother was a doctor, 26 years old.
Yeah.
Then 21 years old, his father dies, and he is essentially an orphan.
Yeah.
And then the Nazis invade. And then the Soviets invade.
Yep.
And then the world essentially gives Poland to Soviet communism.
Yes.
And he lives under that.
Yeah.
One of his friends was toying around with a gun when he was a teenager.
Right.
Pointed it at the Pope.
Yeah.
Fired. Didn't know it was loaded.
Wow.
Just barely missed the Pope.
Wow.
A couple years later, he gets hit by a truck while he's out working in a work camp.
Yeah.
Then he becomes Pope. He gets shot.
Yes.
Nearly dies.
Right.
Then he falls, breaks his hip. I mean, this is a man that had massive suffering
early
in his life. He's living under this repressive regime.
Right.
I mean, our hard times compared to what he lived through, it's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
Well, I'm going to use a quote from your book, which is, there's no evil to be faced that Christ doesn't face with us, no enemy that Christ hasn't already conquered, no cross to bear that Christ hasn't already borne for us and does not now bear with us. Well, we're so delighted, Patrick Nowakowski, to have your light shining for the world, telling us about JP2, 100 Ways to Be, I'm sorry, give us the full name of the book.
100 Ways John Paul II Changed
the World. And we can find that. How would somebody tell us where we would go to find that book? I think it's Books by Patrick, is that right?
Booksbypatrick.com is where you can go to get an autographed copy. I will sign it myself and ship it to you.
Amazing.
And you can also find it at our Sunday Visitor Bookstore and Amazon.com and everywhere you find wonderful Catholic books.
100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World by Patrick Nowakowski. So great talking with you, Patrick. Thank you for a witness. Thank you for your time. We'll be back in just a couple of moments on Faith and Leadership on DFW Alive. Welcome back to Faith and Leadership. This is Jerry Jacob with DFW Live. I want to thank Cecil Anderson, who's producing this show, and Diane Xavier, who often does, and Dave Palmer, who is the grand poobah at Catholic Radio in Dallas with KTHAM and all the great good people at Guadalupe Radio Network around the country. We are talking today with Patrick Nowakowski. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Jerry.
Well, you know, you are telling us about 100 ways in which John Paul II changed the world, right? I mean, and this was a man, a pope and leader in our world. I'm reflecting on the fact that the great Jubilee year that where he opened the doors of St. Peter's, or the specific door in St. Peter's in 2000, you know, we're still struggling, frankly. I am. I try really hard. I'm kind of slow, though, and struggling to just get with the program and understand all the incredible, ravishingly beautiful things that JP2 brought to us about the faith. He certainly freed us from the specter of communism in some very important ways when the Iron Curtain came down as a result of his help and his leadership with a couple of folks, with Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, and others. You, Patrick, have had so much engagement with him. You've come to know him. I consider it a high honor, by the way, because we've had George Weigel on this program, who's written biographies, approved biographies by JP2. But I think this is a figure, a man who's, of course, a human being, but he's a saint. He is a towering, towering figure for our time. And because he's been with us here very recently, we're still living in his time. What he does is accessible to all of us. Of course, it's accessible through the archives of the Vatican, Holy See, the encyclicals he's written, the other documents he's authored, the books he's written, Crossing the Threshold of Hope, and so many others, so many great biographies and autobiographies. But, you know, as human beings, especially in this post-COVID era, sometimes the most vivid and the most beautiful way to experience someone's life and their legacy is to be in the place, to be where they're from, and to walk in their footsteps. So, Patrick, you're doing something really exciting this fall. Tell us about the pilgrimage you're leading to Poland.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this. You know, in the days, in the late 90s, when I met John Paul II, I traveled to Poland 4 times and got to see some of the most extraordinary places where he was, the Tatra Mountains, near Zakopane, where he skied, the place in Krakow where he celebrated his very first Mass, the Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa, where he went and poured out his heart to Our Lady, the place where he was born in Wadowice, and all of these places, including Auschwitz and Warsaw, all on the trip. Is October 18th to 27th.
Wow, October 18th to 27th. So that's a 9-day visit, and it's strictly Poland. Is that right?
Yep. We land in Warsaw, and we take off from Krakow. And see all of the wonderful places in between.
Yeah, and so So give us a quick sense of how that pilgrimage is organized. Are you going to have, I'm sure, spiritual support, a chaplain coming along?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's being organized by Corporate Travel, who does all the pilgrimages for Steve Ray, for Father Mike Schmitz, for Ave Maria, and it's based in Michigan. They actually specialize in this type of trip. They hire only Catholic tour guides on the ground.
Yes.
So I'll be on the bus. I'll be giving a talk about John Paul II in between stops and kind of pointing out the highlights. But on the ground, they've got people that do this for a living who are fully Catholic, fully devoted to the faith, who are fully able to answer questions and tell you the intricacies of what you're going to experience there. And every day includes mass, includes the ground transportation, hotels, flights, all of that is all inclusive.
Of course, Krakow, these are all great places. Krakow is amazing in its own right, even beyond JP2. I mean, of course, you know, the history of the 20th century sort of unfolded with the world wars and, of course, Poland in the crosshairs of expansionism, the Soviet Union, Russia, Nazi Germany and then far beyond all of that, before all of that. So Patrick, talk a little bit about the various cities, Wadowice, and then, of course, are you going to Częstochowa, right, also?
Częstochowa, yeah, absolutely. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, which was one of the places that was so close to John Paul II's heart. Wow. As a young man, his father would take him on pilgrimage there. Shortly after his mother died, they went on a pilgrimage, and his father essentially said, "Now she is your mother."
Wow.
And that's one of the reasons, just one of many reasons, that she was so close to his heart.
Yeah.
And one of the places in Krakow that I'm really looking forward to, I've been there a couple of times, is the Tomb of St. Faustina.
Yes.
When John Paul II was younger, he moved to Krakow just a few months before Faustina died in 1938.
Yeah.
And he started going to college before the war. And he would passed by the convent after her death.
Yes.
Quite often he would stop to pray as a young priest, made many trips there, and knew about Faustina intimately. Matter of fact, he was the one that opened her cause for canonization.
Yes.
He was the one that led the Holy See had put a kind of a kibosh on spreading divine mercy according to Faustina, because they couldn't get an accurate translation.
Yeah.
Being the Archbishop of Krakow, he put his top theologian in charge of that. And 6 months and one day before he was elected Pope, the Holy See lifted the restrictions, and that was his work. That was his part of Providence being in charge of that.
Well, you know, and could this, was this a man who could get things done or what? But you know, something you've told me, because I've always been a great fan of JP2, at least since I was a college student and met him for the first time. But what people don't know, there's an amazing book and there's an amazing confluence based on what you're talking about right here. Back to the fathers in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Father Michael Gately has written a book, which I have read recently. It's called The Second Greatest Story Ever Told. An amazing book that not many people know about, since his 33 Days to Morning Glory, which we happen to be doing right now in our family and among some friends who are traveling to Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine this summer. But there's this triumvirate, or maybe more. You have Faustina Kowalska, Saint Faustina Kowalska. Mm-hmm. You have JP2 the Great. You have Maximilian Kolbe, and Poland. I've always been just so fascinated by Poland as this country that has just been under the boot of so many movements in Europe, but at the same time has born Bjorn greatness. I mean, incredible people have come out of it. And Father Michael Gately, I really encourage people to pick up the book, because this book talks about how sort of the salvific sort of river runs right through Poland. I mean, it seems like we should all be traveling to Poland. Okay, so tell us, are you going to visit any St. Kolbe's?
So we'll be at Auschwitz. Twice I've been to Auschwitz, at the cell where he died.
Wow.
Of course, he has no relics because he was burnt. Well, other than people kept his hair.
Oh, my gosh.
When he got a haircut, people kept his hair because they knew he would be a
relic.
a canonized saint. So those are the only relics left.
Yeah.
But But yeah, so St. Faustina's tomb is at the Shrine of Divine Mercy in Krakow in Wagoniki.
Wow.
I've been there a couple of times. Matter of fact, the last time I went there was about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And I met this beautiful old nun who knew Faustina.
Wow.
Her name was Sister Beata.
Wow.
And she was well into her 90s. And this is just, these nuns, they spend so much time in front of the Blessed Sacrament, they literally glow.
Mm.
So this elderly nun was telling me about meeting Faustina and just, you know, who she was and what everything is beautiful. And then middle of winter.
Wow.
We're walking out. She comes to the door. She stands outside in the cold. And she wouldn't go back in until we drove away. I mean, she's standing there smiling at us and waving. And this is my last memory of being at the Shrine of Divine Mercy.
Yeah.
And since then, they built this newer shrine. John Paul II, one of his last trip to Poland, he came and he consecrated the shrine.
Yeah.
And Jesus came to St. Faustina in the 1930s, 40s.
Sorry, 1930s. Yes.
And said, you need to prepare the world for my second coming. No small task, right? And so from the heart of Poland comes, as you said, John Paul II, St. Maximilian Kolbe, St. Faustina Kowalska, with a message to the world about Christ's mercy and where we need to be as a Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So just going there and experiencing the people of Poland, as you said so well, have been under this crucible of pain for hundreds of years.
Yes.
And, you know, not since the fall of communism have they had their freedom.
Yes.
But you'll see that in their faces, that these people, they've taken in hundreds of thousands of refugees from Ukraine during that war. They just took them into their homes.
They did. And what's I find to be a couple of really amazing things in many respects, and according to many metrics, the Polish people are the greatest allies of America on the European continent, which is saying something incredible. And you know what's sad? You said they only had their freedom since the Iron Curtain came down. Well, guess what? I disagree with that in this way. And this is my opinion. This is simply subjective, and I have a right to express my opinion still, I think. One of the first actions undertaken by a recent president whose name will go unmentioned, his name which shall not be mentioned, is to dismantle the shield, the defensive shield in around Poland against the Soviet Union. But of course that was restored by the last president, and since I've no idea where it is now. But the point really is that Poland remains, these people are beautiful people. They have a rich, incredible Catholic and Christian patrimony, and it's available. I think my son just told me this a couple of days ago. Is this true, Patrick, that Poland may be one of the only countries that doesn't require a vaccination certificate to travel there in Europe?
Correct. They lifted that about 3 months ago.
Wow.
So there is no restriction at all. You have your American passport. You come, they stamp it, you're in. Wow. You don't need to show any papers at all.
And by the way, if anybody wants to take advantage of that, there's a pilgrimage you can go on in October.
Yes, absolutely.
What are the dates of that pilgrimage again?
October 18th to 27th. I actually created, I had this URL. I just wanted to use it. It's theconnectedcatholic.com. So remember to put theconnectedcatholic.com. We'll take you right to the landing page of corporate travel to sign up for that pilgrimage.
Yeah. So give us a couple of little vignettes, by the way, kind of favorite places for you to travel. I'm just thinking about being in Krakow. And the little factory, right, where they were, where maybe those that were headed to the concentration camps were. No. Well, the factory where, what was the movie? Spielberg's movie about.
Schindler's List.
Schindler's List, right? The factory where, I think maybe Schindler's factory where he was hiding or maybe in some way providing support to people that would be found out by the authorities. That's right there in plain sight. Certainly, I don't know if places like the salt mines are like the secret seminary is probably one of your stops.
Yeah, so John Paul II studied actually in the cardinal's residence. That was where he studied for the seminary. We're going to be in the chapel of the kings, where the kings of Poland are buried in underneath the cathedral.
Yeah.
That's where John Paul II celebrated his first mass.
Wow.
And I've been there. It is breathtaking.
Yeah.
You can just soak up the graces that are there in that place. So we'll go to the Tatra Mountains in Zakopane, where he skied. Wow. It was one of his favorite getaways.
I know he's a skier, and I love skiing too. So this is, tell me about this, because we don't have a ton of time, but tell me where in Poland is this located?
In Zakopane.
Okay, it's how far
right
is that from?
Near the either Czech border or Slovakian border.
Okay.
So that was, my geography isn't right. I think that is in the southern part. Yeah, southern part of Poland.
Great. And so, is it still a working ski recreation area?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a mountainous area. They built a chapel there to honor John Paul II when he recovered from being shot. And we'll visit that chapel. We'll have mass there. There's a museum as well in Warsaw that we'll visit.
Yes.
There's a museum. Matter of fact, one of my friends was just like yesterday in Wadowice, where John Paul was born. We'll actually go to the room where he was born.
And
there's a big museum surrounding that. And the cassock that he was wearing when he was shot in May of 1981, that is there.
Amazing.
First class relic, essentially. It has his blood. They also have the stone that was over his tomb. And so at first, when John Paul was, when he died, he was buried in the chapel underneath St. Peter's Basilica.
Yeah.
After he was canonized, they brought him up to the main level so more people could have access. But the stone that was over his tomb in the lower level at St. Peter's is now in Poland.
Incredible.
So that was close to his body for many years after his death.
Yeah,
it's beautiful things.
Incredible, it sounds amazing. I'm going to have to add
and
this.
And the food.
Go
the food.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I used to live in the Northeast and now live in the great state of Texas, but one thing we don't get are those amazing little potato dumplings But I want to tell you, to finish up, Patrick, I with all of this, something maybe a little bit more accessible if somebody can't go on pilgrimage. A really breathtaking place to visit in this country is the John Paul II Shrine in Washington, D.C., right next to the campus of the Catholic University of America. I've been lost in that building, just in a reflective, beautiful space, beautiful worship space or sanctuary and church they have in there, and so accessible within D.C. But we're so grateful to you, Patrick, for being on, for coming and telling us about all the great work you're doing, but also the opportunity for pilgrims, for people to join you on this pilgrimage, which you've whetted my interest. I'm going to see if there's a way that I can make it, because it's such an incredible, incredible place. And like I said, my son yesterday said, "Dad, we have to go to Poland." And of course, he was there about 5 years ago, but too young. He's 16, 17 now, too young to remember everything. So maybe you can make this an annual event also, Patrick. But thank you for being with us, Patrick Nowakowski. The website is, there's a couple of websites, booksbypatrick.com, and then tell us the other two URLs for the pilgrimage.
TheConnectedCatholic.com. Yeah, and that's the pilgrimage, and you can find the book and things about me at booksbypatrick.com.
Thank you, Patrick Nowakowski, founder of Nova Media. Thank you for your time. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with Faith and Leadership on DFW Live.